The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Now, there is no doubt about the story of the week, the scandal of the mother and baby homes and the awful treatment that was meted out to women and their babies and the pain and the secrets that have gone on affecting so many lives right up to this day. This isn't in the past for many people. This is their daily reality. Now, in a little while, we're going to be talking to the woman so many of you know from Judi Dench's portrayal of her in the movie Philomena. Philomena Lee will be joining us by phone. But with me in studio, I'm joined now by comedian. I'll talk to you, PJ Gallagher, first, actually, because we saw your tweet this week and people know you as a comedian, they know you for the laughs, but the pain that was in the tweet, more news on the place where I was born, terrifying what women and kids before me had to go through, because you were born in Bessborough House.
I was, yeah, I was born in Bessborough House in 75. And to me, to be honest, I thought when I was born there that it was at a better stage, or that what had happened was over by then. So I've always considered myself one of the lucky ones, and I suppose I am, really, you know. Because I don't have any horrific stories to tell myself or anything. But it does make you... I've never felt guilty about being adopted before or guilty about my story before anything. And then when I read what had gone on in that house this week, it just struck me, and it really kind of knocked me for six, you know. And it raised a whole lot of questions that I never had in my own head before. And that was hard to deal
with. What kind of questions?
Just questions like especially when you hear questions of the vaccines, and that had gone on up until the year after I'd left there, you know, which is something I'd never imagined. So I was in foster care for 4 months, so start to wonder where I was or what had happened in that time, you know, or how long was I in Bessborough myself? You know, questions I don't know the answers to this day. And then, like I said, guilt is it's the first time I've ever felt guilt about.
Why? Because you survived and so many babies
I think maybe
died.
There's an element to that, or maybe there's an element of feeling responsible for the whole thing, which I know doesn't really make any sense, but I think generally it probably is. Like, if you read the tweet, I think it was just, I felt so lucky maybe as well, and guilty at the same time, that I was one of the people that didn't suffer as like so many did in there before me. I'd read Juden Golding's book, The Light in the Window, or The Candle in the Window, I can't remember the exact title beforehand, about everything that had happened in the house, but it was ancient history to me, if you know what I mean.
What's remarkable at the moment, isn't it? Because, you know, you're saying it was ancient history. You'd grown up kind of thinking, oh, all this kind of stuff, the scandals, that was all, you know, way back in the 30s, 40s and 50s. You'd been born in 75. This wasn't your reality. But that's not the case. What's really weird is that this went on for so long in plain sight that it's an open secret in so many families.
Yeah, it seems to be. It seems to be that it was... that's what I suppose I felt like growing up, and up until this point I've always felt that at that time I was normal, I was part of the course, but I am one of the lucky ones. And it was covered up, like, you know, by the institutions, by the government, by everybody involved at the time, and it was so horrific for so long, you know. The fact that there's still a need for those services, it kind of shocks me, you know. And the fact that I only learned, like, I always felt at least I wasn't born in a Magdalene laundry. I often felt that, you know, that was where the bad stuff really happened. So there was never any questions then. It was a mother and baby home, and that was a better place to be. And obviously women didn't suffer as much there, or children didn't, or, you know. So, and then when these revelations come out, you realise, well, it was just as bad everywhere, you know. All these places run by the church at the time, or by the government at the time, they were all the same, you know. And the fact that there's no one's been held accountable, nobody's really looking into it, nobody really seems to want to know the answers on a higher level, and it's building a real frustration, you know. Mm-hmm. A frustration I've never felt before, and that's probably why I went.
And why do you think this is all happening now? What do you think has brought it to a head? Because, you know, people have been talking about the mother and baby homes and what went on there, and trying to get it, you know, put on the agenda, inquired into for a long, long time now. Why now are we suddenly paying attention?
I don't know. I think, well, it started probably with the Magdalene Laundries story last year. I mean, that was the beginning of it, you know. And from there, it seems people just took an interest and have gradually been finding out more and more and more. And it's led to us to where we are now, where we found out about the mother and baby homes too. And then, I mean, Tuam was where it all began as a news story. And once that broke, you know, everybody who had a voice or who had a story to tell for so long and wasn't being listened to suddenly had an ear, you know. And that's what's important. That's what's changed. People have now, their antenna is up. They have an ear for it. And these people who've been ignored for so long and who've wanted to tell their stories for so long and have horrible stories to tell and want justice as well, that now they finally have an ear. So now is really time, hopefully, you know.
And actually, of course, the story that so many people know that has been, you know, in the headlines and, you know, people have been seeing it in the movies and reading the book, is the story of Philomena Lee. Philomena Lee, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning to you.
And thank you so much for joining us today. It really is a pleasure to talk to you. I want to start, Philomena, actually, with a question that starts really from the end of the movie, when you forgave Sister Hildegard, even though you had been searching for this baby son, you knew him as Anthony, that had been taken away from you. He'd grown up as Michael. He had been searching for you before he passed away, unfortunately, from illness. And even though Sister Hildegard, this nun in Sean Ross Abbey, had, you know, not helped, in fact, had hindered the two of you meeting, you still managed to forgive her. Now, in a week where there has been so much trauma, so much angst, so much anger, where did that spirit of forgiveness come from, Philomena? How did you manage to develop that?
Well, it took me a long time, actually, because when Anthony went, I went to Liverpool for 2 years and worked in a boys' school. They got me a job in a boys' school there, the nun. And then I went down to St. Albans, where I live now, and did psychiatric nursing for 30 years. But I can assure you, working in psychiatry over the years, I was still angry for a very long time. And I lost my religion for a while as well. But gradually over the years, and you see so much sorrow, so much hurt, so much pain that is caused through anger. Throughout my nursing career, I did. And gradually, I kind of let it go. I had to leave it go in the end because now Anthony will be 62 in July, this next month. And I couldn't go through the whole of my life being angry because I'm normally not an angry person, but I was very angry in the beginning. You know, so much because it was so... Oh, I suffered agonies in the beginning about it all, really. But that's why I did forgive in the end. So, and I gradually, about 10 years ago when I started, I never forgot him any day in my whole life. I prayed for him day and night. But the thing is, 11 years ago, when I first told, I kept the secret, as you know, for 50 years, didn't tell anybody, as we weren't allowed to talk. Well, we lost our identity in the homes and one thing and another. So I just kept it secret 50 years until I went home to my brother one day and he said, for goodness sake, go back home and tell your son and your daughter. And which I told my daughter, and straight away, she's never stopped working on the story. For 2.5 years, we tried everything we could try to see if we could find him. And then she was about to give up. And she got a friend, Merton Martin Sixsmith, who wrote the book originally. But then she was about to give up. She had found him. She found him first before Martin. We had told Martin. And she had found him because she got this word from this nun. Somebody said, the last resort we had, please ring this number. So we rang this number in Cork, this nun. And it was a lot. We were just about to give up to try and find him because my daughter tried everything. Anyway, we rang this nun. Oh, yes, she said, I really have got some news for you. So I thought, I said to Jane, my goodness. And we were in England then. We were foreign from England to Ireland, Cork. And she said, but I'm very sorry to tell you he's dead, just like that, out of the blue. Well, I tell you, it was like losing him for a second time all over again, you know. And that really was, but she said, just to let you know, there's a plaque of his in Ross Gray. And I thought, a plaque, you know, we just looked at one another. And I thought it was just a picture or something. There's a plaque of his that he left for the nuns in Ross Gray. So we headed back to Ross Gray again. And then, but as I say, we went back and they wouldn't give us any information in the beginning. That's it. You know,
I mean, say you'd worked in psychiatry and psychology and you'd learnt an awful lot, but to survive all of that, Philomena, I don't know how you had the willpower. Did it, I mean, I know you never got to hold Anthony again, but the fact that the book got written, the fact that the movie got made, when you saw that truth put out there, do you think it's helped other people tell their story now?
Oh, you can't believe. I just cannot believe it. Because when I first told this story, I never, ever, ever even thought it was going to be a book, let alone a film. You know, I honestly didn't. All I just wanted to do was to try and find Anthony because I was getting into my 70s at that time, you know, and I just wanted to find, I was desperate to find him. all my life worrying what had happened to him, where he was, you know. I knew he'd gone to America and he was adopted in America to a good Catholic home, but that's all they told me, you know. So they didn't tell me anything else. So I was so desperate to find him. And that's, you know.
And you talk about living with the secret for 50 years. And again, I mean, that's part of what people here have been finding out and talking about all week. Family secrets that have persisted for generations, things that one or two people knew, but, you know, was never, ever spoken about.
Oh, no, because we were so browbeaten, saying how wicked we were. We'd committed mortal sin twice over and all this sort of thing. So we were terrified. I mean, my mother died when I was 6 and I was put into a convent school in Limerick. And I stayed till I was 18. And, of course, we believed every single word. I mean, you didn't doubt it. You wouldn't query it. You know, you just went along with everything that you were taught and believed everything, you know, so... That's how it was in those days. But as I said, then we were too terrified when we came out. I didn't know one another. I'd made a friend, but I just knew her as her name she had. And I was called Marcella. So we had to lose our identity for all the times I was there. And I was there 3.5 years. And then when he went back looking for me, they told him I had abandoned him at 2 weeks. I mean, I ask you, I mean, imagine how one would feel about that. You know, they told Anthony, and he died thinking I had abandoned him. But I'm sure in his heart he realised I hadn't done. You know, so I bring tears to my eyes.
Because it doesn't just seem to have been, you know, that it was a tough system. It's the emotional cruelty. It's lines like that. It's Anthony being told you had abandoned him. What do you understand the point of all of that? Or can you get your head around the thinking there?
No, I can't get it. And they knew. They must have known he was a dying man. Because, I mean, and they still wouldn't tell him, you know, so why didn't they tell him? And yet some people that have phoned in, some of the programme, Sister Hildegard did help them, but why couldn't she help, you know, I never, to this day, I can't make out why she couldn't help Anthony, you know, and his partner. They were over there and he was desperate to try and find me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the reasons were. And they actually say they can't answer that question. They can't answer it at all.
It's the emotional cruelty, isn't it? And it's as bad as...
It was shocking, absolutely shocking. And then when I found out, I never knew much of his life until I got on Twitter when he found out, and it was his partner that gave us all the information that, you know, so, and all that had happened. He'd been over with Anthony looking for me, and he just gave us, I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't have, it's so near and yet so far, you know. I could have been an hour away from Luke flying to Roscrane and could have found him there and then. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when we went back once going around, my daughter had found the grave by this stage, you know, but she didn't recognise it at first because it was my Anthony Hess, where Michael was born Anthony Lee. And so then she eventually, when we caught up with it all, we discovered that that was his grave. And he'd been there 9 years before we were told about it. So, you know, we weren't invited, never told about the service that when his ashes were laid to rest, when they interred his ashes, nobody told us at all. So I didn't know. And 9 years he was in Roscrane before I even knew it. You know, so there it is. It's terrible. Hurt is bad, you know.
It really is. I want to, Philomena, stay with us if you wouldn't mind. I want to come back to some of our guests in studio. I'm also joined by Edward Smith, and it's this whole idea of, you know, the secrets in families. And your granny, she had passed away for 8 years before her secret came to light. Is that right, Ed?
Yeah, that really struck what Philomena said about the 50 years of holding a secret. It was so... that idea of these secrets, it's almost institutionalised into our psyche. You know, as an Irish family from...
What had happened to your granny and how did you find out?
Well, it was quite an unusual one. Like, she basically didn't tell anybody. So she went to the grave not telling anybody at all about...
She had a daughter.
Yeah, she had a daughter. And it was quite an unusual case now because she was actually 25 years of age and she was married with 2 children at the time in the 50s. And basically her husband at the time was, they were never really accepted by each other's family, her husband, and I think he was about 10 years older. And so they kind of lived at her family home for a part and then his family home for a part. And then eventually he joined, as a lot of people did, the British Army. and then went AWOL and went missing for about 8 years. So we can only presume that my grandmother met someone else. But she still had two children for this man. She was still technically married. It was in the 50s and she fell pregnant. So we don't actually know how she got. She was sent to St. John's County Home in Sligo. And we don't really know how she was admitted there, whether it was the priest that helped them out, or I say helped them out now, but sent her there. But she went to that home and she was there for, and she went there in 1953. She signed in with her married name. And she then, but she was down as single. And then she was there for 3 years, you know, to work off her sin, so to speak. And then to give away in the laundries, and then to give away her then child, who was then actually one of the lucky ones, like PJ said. We've later, you know, met up and we've had a big family reunion, and she was adopted, or rather fostered, to a family in the same area actually, which was even more.
Do you, because I mean, obviously there would have been, because it wasn't just the Catholic Church that was putting the pressure, you know, it was the neighbours, it was the fathers, it was the families. There was this whole society that was involved, wasn't it? It was happening for Protestant girls and mm-hmm. for Catholic girls as well.
Well, do you want to know something though? I would disagree with you to that sense, because I'm actually doing a lot of research at the moment for a book, and it's to do with, I actually do believe that it was, people say it was the time, it was society, but I think it was society at the hand of the oppression of the Catholic Church. Because without saying, like, I believe that we are brainwashed, as our parents were and their parents were, in a sense that I know there's a lot of good people in an institution which I believe to be bad, but there are a lot of good people that do a lot of good things within there.
But so, I mean, Philomena's gone now, but if you know, the person who brought her to the home was her father.
That's what I mean, but he would have been Catholic and believed everything, and like, he was brought up under the oppression of the Catholic Church. You know, you've got to do this. And like Philomena says, you wouldn't question anything. You would do, you'd be in fear. They you suppress your ignorance.
But you look at the Bethany Homes as well, you know, and I mean, a huge scandal about that. And that is going to be brought into the scope, I think, of the inquiry. And I suppose it was a question that was asked in the Dáil during the week. If you take the attitude, you know, that there was, family, society and all the rest, the times involved, does that mean that nobody ends up being blamed? Where do we go with an inquiry? Are these questions in your head, PJ?
Well, they are a bit. I mean, definitely society as a whole played a part. I mean, like, you needed your neighbours, especially if you lived in a rural community. You couldn't isolate yourself. Potentially a scandal like that would isolate you. You could be shut off, you know.
Yeah, you too young to remember causing scandal? Do you remember that? That was a thing the nuns used to talk about, that it was a dreadful thing to cause scandal.
Yeah, that's probably before my
that
time. But I do know from researching back that, you know, potentially in your community, if you're especially in the rural community at the time, you could have been ostracised and put in a bad place. So I think, yeah, okay, the church facilitated it, you know, and the state facilitated it. But, you know, it did, like you said, the families were complicit, and people were. They did put people in these institutions. And there was probably a bit of willful ignorance as to what was going on in a lot of those institutions as well. So, you know, you can. I do think as well, the church is probably the number one culprit, you know. But it was a different time too. And I'm not justifying that in any way of what happened. What happened was awful. And I'd be no fan of the church. And what happened there is, I would say it's mostly their problem, but you know, they didn't go out looking for people either. People had to be brought into those homes, and so.
But as well,
let's listen to Mary Lawler, because she's on the line now. And Mary Lawler, you were also born in Sean Ross, and you came across Sister Hildegard when you were trying to trace your birth family. And like Philomena, I believe you don't believe she was very helpful to you either.
Hello. Yes. Good morning. Yes. This is Mary Lawler here.
How are you, Mary?
I was born in Sean Ross Abbey in 1960. And my brother, Jerry, was born in 1963 in Sean Ross Abbey. And he was sent to the US in 1965.
And in your researches, Mary, and in trying to track down, I know you've come across letters, because it wasn't just that women and their babies were being, you know, oppressed and treated so cruelly. It was also, there was a huge level of snobbery involved. You know, there was a good class of fallen woman and there was a poorer class of fallen woman, and there was different treatment for both.
Well, in the original letters that I actually have that was sent to my adoptive parents in 1961, it's actually categorically states that the child under 6 months old is recommended for adoption, while the two-year-old is probably more institutionalised.
When you see words like that written on a piece of paper, I have a copy of that letter here, it's so cruel, isn't it? It's such a cruel description of any child. Do you understand the mindset that went into putting those sentences down on paper?
Yes, and then that they actually took back two little Protestant children from the home in England, which would have been adopted in Ireland, so they would not have even been given the right to be brought up in their own religious ethnic. You know, it was all about gaining more Catholics into their society.
What's the past couple of weeks been like for you, Mary?
Well, I suppose I've been dealing with it since way before 1993, that anything that comes out is no surprise to me. Absolutely, I'm not shocked.
But do you understand why there's now the kind of reaction that people like you have been trying to get, you know, from the public and from the politicians to what happened in the mother and baby homes? What changed, do you think?
I think once the tune babies, I mean, we've been campaigning for so long on these issues. And I mean, Adoption Rights Alliance have been tirelessly meeting with ministers and they've been saying the same thing. But I mean, I think it was once the tune babies, and thanks to Catherine Corliss for coming forward and doing that hard work, that she highlighted it, that it wasn't just tune, it was the mother and baby homes across Ireland.
And do you think as well stories like Philomena's and something like that movie have helped?
Yes, that has helped as well. And we actually had a memorial service, the very, very first memorial service, held on the 1st of June in Sean Ross Abbey. And the multitudes of people that came out to support that, mothers, adoptees, families, you know, affected by this, that also helped. And then we actually had another service in Bessborough in Cork, which actually more highlighted it as well.
And what do you think, Mary, having worked on this issue for so long and campaigned for so long, what does an inquiry need to achieve? You know, it's not just about compensation. Compensation can never bring back the babies that will never be held in their mother's arms.
I think that it's going to give, I mean, a reassurance to the mothers. Well, it will and it won't, because so many of these ladies are still living in the shame and the fear of what both church and state have done.
And there are still so many families where the truth has not been told.
Yes, there is. I mean, on the 1st of June, we actually had a lady come forward who does not know if her child is dead or alive. Okay, I mean, you just have to step into that lady's shoes for a few seconds to imagine what her life has been since she was 15 years old. Traumatic.
You know that word closure that people use? Do you think we're at a stage where people who, you know, had their babies in these homes, where babies who were born there and want to know the truth about their past, do you think we're at a stage now where we can say the state is going to be able to offer people closure, resolution, peace of mind, I suppose?
I think no matter what, it's going to take generations to actually take away that pain. I don't think, no matter what is done, that those women will ever have a relief of pain. Never. Or any adoptee. I mean, the pain of searching, the pain of losing your child, either whether it was through adoption or through death, these ladies had no win. Once they entered the gates of a mother and baby home, it was a lose.
And do you think we were particularly cruel here in Ireland, attitudes?
Well, attitudes was, I mean, I've heard lots of references during the week where they were saying it's society, but you've also got to believe that the church and the state led society.
PJ and Ed, you're both nodding to that.
Absolutely. And I think that with the question with regards to the inquiry, it's simply not good enough. We know horrible things happened. What else are they going to find out? Yeah, some closure for some families and some individuals, which they need and deserve. But these people need to be prosecuted. This has to happen. It's absolutely ridiculous, the amount of scandals that the Catholic Church have at their hands, and nothing has been done. with regards to them paying for their crimes?
Because it may be very difficult, of course. Whatever an inquiry could achieve, it may be very difficult. I mean, in previous inquiries, it's proven difficult to mount criminal prosecutions as a result of it all, simply the passage of time.
Yeah, but also a huge part of this is just getting the truth, you know. It's people's voices, people who have felt ignored for so long, you know, and a lot of healing will be in hearing the stories and hearing the truth behind it, and people finally getting to tell their stories. Like, you wonder where prosecution's going to get anyone, like what's money going to do for anyone this far on. But
no, well, justice, you know, even just to see that they're not above the law, they can no longer lord that authority over people, you know, I just think it's incredible that it's not being given more thought, that, you know, justice, basically, it doesn't matter what age mm-hmm. they might be, even to be brought in and questioned or arrested and questioned or some sort of, you know, you're not above us, you can't get away with this, you know.
It should definitely need to be held accountable. They definitely mm-hmm. need to be made answer for what went on. Definitely.
In public.
You know, absolutely. Like,
and do you worry at all about what we're not paying attention to today? You know, there have been various scandals, for instance, about children in care, you know, and that they're not followed up on and they can end up mm-hmm. on the streets and their needs may be not met. Various scandals about, you know, death rates amongst traveller children, or about the treatment of asylum seekers and the detention centres that they're kept in. Do you think at some point in the future, you know, your kids' generation will be sitting there wondering about all of us and what we were doing about all of this in the, you know, 2010s?
I certainly hope not, you know. I mean, of course these things are happening. But it's things like this that you need to put a mark in the sand and say you're never going to let it happen again, you know. We need to make sure we're never facilitate these abuses on anybody again, you know, wherever it is. We don't have mother and baby homes. We can't point their fingers at the church anymore. We need to point ourselves and say, you know, let's stop this. I mean, there is children going missing from care. So I don't know what the numbers are, but every year, and it's even one is too much, you know. So we need to, like, point our fingers at ourselves now, like we need, and say, you know, yeah, let's stop this. So
let me ask you one question, because I know both of you have gone in search of the missing family and trying to track all that down. It's complicated enough for most of us dealing with siblings and dealing with relationships, when they're the ones we've known since we were babies. Meeting again as adults, re-establishing relationships, how complicated is all of that? Maybe PJ, you go first there.
It's strange. I mean, I could tell you the day when I was in school where I remember figuring out that everybody wasn't adopted. So because I was lucky, I was so lucky. I grew up with no secrets and no lies in the house. So for me, I was just told, yeah, you were given birth here and you had parents and we're your man. So I remember being in school and someone saying, no, that's not for everybody.
Well, that was your norm.
Yeah. And I thought it was bizarre. For me, adjusting to it, and I've always had it, so I was ready. When I came to do my search, I was 100% ready. I was really looking. My parents were saying, you have to find where you come from. It's important to you. And then when I started the search probably for the wrong reasons. I just wanted to know medical histories. And, yeah, you know, I was sick of doctors saying, is there a history of this in your family? And me not knowing the answer. And then as I started, I wanted to know more, and I became genuinely curious, and real questions started popping in my head, and yeah, it's an awkward transition because you're meeting people who are effectively strangers but you have a huge attachment to, and adjusting to that takes a lot of time. And I think you meet in it maybe 2 years, you think, well, we're at a place now where it's new, and then you look back another 2 years later and you realize you're still learning from each other and about each other. And so you just have to resign yourself to that process, you know, and be ready
and
before
be patient
you do it, you know.
It. Yeah. And your granny's daughter turned out to be a woman called Bridie who discovered she had a big family.
12 siblings. And I won't take the credit for going searching. That was all down to my aunt. And it was quite crazy because, as you can imagine, my grandmother went on to have another, you know, 7 or 8 or 10 children with the same man. So it was just Bridie was the third child. We remember that day, like we she came down with her own family and all of her brothers and sisters were there. And now, to be honest with you, it's like she was never out of her family. Like, she's my aunt Bridie and she's completely, you know, a part of the family. And, you know, it's as if, and it's funny, she looks quite a lot like my grandmother as well. So
that's sweet.
So yeah, so there's a very happy ending for us with regards to that anyway.
Okay. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming in to talk to us this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Ed Smith and PJ Gallagher. Also thanks to Mary Lawler and Philomena Lee. Susie in Cork called in to say accountability needs to be taken by all. We're a nation of people who care too much about what our neighbours think. So it suited many families to rid themselves of scandal and shame. We'll have more after the break.